for Friday, August 27th. It's the early word from the WNYC newsroom. Hello, I'm Lance Lucky, in for Isaac Davey Aronson, with a look at this morning's top news stories, the day ahead, and reporting highlights from the WNYC news team. Coming up, Arun Venugopal examines the doubts that Muslims are having about Park 51, and Studio 360 sent Eve Tro to New Orleans to find out what's being rebuilt 5 years after Katrina. We'll start with the morning's top headlines just ahead.
The Early Word is a production of WNYC Radio. You can support this podcast by making a donation at WNYC.org, where you can also get the latest updates on this morning's headlines on the news page.
Former President Jimmy Carter has secured the release of a Boston man held in prison in North Korea since January. A spokesman for the Carter Center says Carter will return to the U.S. with Ajalan Gomez. U.S. officials have called Carter's trip a private humanitarian visit. Gomez was sentenced to 8 years for entering the country illegally from China. The UN says it won't be deterred by Taliban threats against relief efforts in flood-ravaged Pakistan. The militant group has attacked aid workers in Pakistan before. Relief efforts are underway to reach about 8 million people in desperate need of basic necessities. In New York, an independent counsel says Governor Patterson gave misleading testimony to state ethics investigators probing how he obtained World Series tickets last year. WNYC's Bob Henley has more.
Earlier this year, Patterson told the Ethics Commission under oath that before he attended the game, he partially made out a check for $850 that was intended to cover the tickets. But in her 41-page report, retired State High Court Chief Judge Judith Kay said that's not what the record shows. She wrote that Patterson's decision to pay for the tickets came only after a press inquiry the day after the game. It would be a violation of state law for a public official to solicit anything of value like free World Series tickets. Kay has referred the matter to Albany County District Attorney David Soares. In a statement, Patterson's private attorney said the governor never lied about the tickets and that he expects the Albany County DA will conclude that no criminal charges are warranted. For WNYC, I'm Bob Henley.
Ahmed Sharif, the Muslim taxi driver who was stabbed Tuesday night allegedly because of his religion, showed a crowd of reporters on the City Hall steps the jagged scar on his neck. Dozens of his fellow taxi drivers and other supporters stood behind him holding signs with messages like "Equality, not hate." Bidavi Desai of the Taxi Workers Alliance says it's clear why Sharif was attacked.
Fear-mongering leads to hate crimes. We have no doubt that the perpetrator in the back seat looked at this man in the front and saw that he was vulnerable. One, because he's a taxi driver, and two, because he is Muslim.
Taxi drivers are calling on Governor Patterson to sign the Driver Protection Act, which they say would help prevent attacks like the one on Sharif. The City Council's vote this week to permit construction of a new skyscraper near the Empire State Building won't just change the city skyline. As WNYC's Matthew Sherman reports, the new tower will also make it harder to build some other big projects in town, like the World Trade Center redevelopment.
One day after the City Council approved the 2 million square foot office tower known as 15 Penn Plaza, the Port Authority finalized its agreement with downtown developer Larry Silverstein. Silverstein will get enough financing guaranteed to build one office tower about equal in size to 15 Penn, but two others won't be built to their planned height unless there's demand from companies that want to lease there. Ryan Severino, an economist at Reis, a real estate consulting firm, says 15 Penn's approval is going to make it harder for Silverstein to find those tenants.
There will be competition between sites like the World Trade Center and buildings like 15 Penn, where they're going to be the newest game in town.
Severino says both the World Trade Center and 15 Penn could thrive, but only if the job market comes back even stronger than most people expect. For WNYC, I'm Matthew Sherman.
The new school will have a new president as of January 1st. David Van Zandt, currently dean of the Northwestern University School of Law, will take over for Bob Kerrey, the former Nebraska senator and governor who joined the new school in 2001. Kerrey has not announced his future plans. Well, taking a look at today's calendar, let's hope the financial news is not quite as bluesy as this. A couple of major things, though. We'll have Wall Street tuned in today. Another reading on second quarter gross domestic product will be released, and it's expected to be revised downward from last month's preliminary estimate of 2.4% growth. And Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke will offer his economic outlook when he addresses the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City's Economic Symposium this morning. And the Reverend Al Sharpton of the National Action Network will be in Washington today. He'll join D.C. Councilmember Harry Tommy Thomas Jr. at a press conference to announce a Reclaim the Dream march. Just a few things happening this Friday.
Go raise your people. You are ignorant, non-American. When you want to respect American people.
My daughter is a veteran of the United States Air Force.
America!
On Sunday, supporters and opponents of the proposed Islamic Cultural Center and mosque near the World Trade Center site held dueling rallies. Opponents outnumbered supporters 2-1. Even more striking was how few Muslims showed up, perhaps a couple of dozen in a crowd of more than 200 supporters. What kept others from coming out? WNYC's Arun Venugopal examines the doubts that Muslims still have about the project known as Park 51.
Iman El-Zoghbi did not stay home on Sunday. She came from Staten Island to support Park 51, but said a lot of Muslims wouldn't risk it.
A lot of Muslims now are just so afraid. They're afraid to say, hey, we're Muslims, we're Americans, why can't we have a mosque?
If Muslim leaders have been slow to act, Shahid Aminullah of altmuslim.com says there's a reason. Many of them have been completely caught off guard by this episode.
And those people who I think were going to come out there and defend this haven't gotten out of this shell shock that they're in right now. This is a really traumatic time for Muslim Americans to see the level of hate that's out there.
But fear of being singled out or even assaulted isn't the only issue.
The organizers definitely need to reach out more to the Muslim community and get allies wherever they can.
The problem, according to some Muslims, is that the Cordoba Initiative, which is behind Park 51, was good at interfaith outreach, but intrafaith, not so much. So a lot of Muslims have been getting their information or misinformation from the same sources as non-Muslims. Hussein Rashid, the professor at Hofstra University, says most Muslims see this as an issue of constitutional rights. But he says the project's backers haven't converted that into support for the project itself.
I still don't think they've done it. I think we're hearing different things, and not wildly different things, but just enough inconsistency that it keeps raising questions from their Twitter feed and their frequently asked questions on their website and their TV appearances.
Differences over the project have also tapped into class divisions among Muslims. Some say the concept itself, an upscale community center with a gym, pool, and restaurant, is hard for more traditional Muslims to understand. Even the name, Park 51, might sound more like a Manhattan hotspot than a mosque. Even with all these issues, activists say there are plenty of Muslims who would stand in support of the project if they were part of a larger organized effort. Azim Khan is with the Islamic Circle of North America.
There's definitely a major lack of leadership right now in the Muslim community. Once the national leaders get on the same page, we'll probably see the local leadership follow suit, and in turn, we'll see the young people get involved. They usually look to the elders to see what direction should they take.
Muslim organizations still haven't come up with a game plan to deal with the sudden flaring of anti-Islamic sentiment around the country. On Wednesday, they held a private conference call with prominent Muslims to explain the Park 51 plan. The invitees, over 50 of them from all over the country, included religious leaders and academics, as well as screenwriters and comedians. For WNYC, I'm Arun Venugopal.
5 years ago this weekend, Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. Levees were breached and disastrous flooding followed. Katrina created an urban emergency of a kind the country had not seen before. The discussion about rebuilding the city started immediately and attracted urban planners like Rob Olshansky, co-author of a new book, Clear as Mud, Planning for the Rebuilding of New Orleans.
I think particularly a lot of people from outside the city of New Orleans thought that it wasn't a very good place to build. It's low-lying, it's on the coast, and maybe we should just abandon it. But, you know, the reality is we really can't make that kind of decision. It's a city that has a lot of people invested in it, both emotionally and economically. It's an important city to the country in terms of transportation infrastructure, the port. And so it was just the mention of that that really galvanized the neighborhoods into action.
Plans to rebuild have ranged from simple and homespun to exotic and high-tech. WNYC Studio 360 sent reporter Eve Tro into New Orleans neighborhoods to see how some of the rebuilding projects are coming along. Her first stop was the very hardest-hit area, the Lower Ninth Ward, where she met the owner of one of Brad Pitt's Make It Right houses.
I'm Melba Leggett, and I have the number 4 Brad Pitt house.
The day I met Melba, she had just gotten off work at a local school cafeteria. She was even still dressed in her white uniform. Melba is a lifelong resident of the Lower Ninth Ward. She lost her home in the flooding.
It was a 2-bedroom wood frame house, and water was all the way up to the top. I just knew we weren't going to be able to come back. At the time, they were talking like they were going to close this section because it's going to be all a park now. And I'm like, I don't want to curse on radio.
The Lower Ninth Ward isn't a park, but it's not quite the populated neighborhood it was before the flood. Not everyone has come back. There's a number of empty lots. There are boarded up houses, and there are several houses being rebuilt independently. And although the Make It Right houses are these sort of design superstars, they were made with the residents in mind. For example, Melba's house has a porch where she can entertain family or sit out at night and wave to her neighbors, just like she used to.
The architects themselves are from Philadelphia, the Karen Timberlake people. They asked every inch of the house, what do you want? I picked the colors. The color is taupe and yellow. And these are my solar panels. This gives the house the juice.
The Make It Right houses are examples of modern, sustainable, green architecture. But maybe more importantly, they're designed to withstand another flood.
Baby, if something come through here, the stilts that it's on has girders. The water will hit the house. The girder will be holding it in place, and the house will just sway back and forth. But when I come home this time, it'll be a house. I won't have to look for it, okay?
But there are some people who come to look for Melba's home. In the short time I was there, 2 buses of tourists drove through the neighborhood.
Sometimes you can get up and walk in this living room at 2 o'clock in the morning and somebody snap your picture. A lot of the neighbors, they're getting tired of it. But I mean, it doesn't bother me because I like talking to people. You keep on coming to me because I wants to be in the history book. Reading about me 20 years or 30 years from now is a good thing.
You can hear more stories from New Orleans on Studio 360 this weekend, Saturday afternoon at 4 and Sunday morning at 11 on 93.9 FM and Sunday afternoon at 2 on AM 820. Or you can listen online and see some photos of the rebuilding projects at studio360.org. It is time for today's Gig Alert. The band Elike blends the traditional West African rhythms of Togo with Afro-funk and jazz. The Washington, D.C.-based ensemble is in town to perform its captivating danceable music tomorrow night at Joe's Pub. You can download Elike's latest single on our culture page. Just click on culture at WNYC.org. Congo is burning, the floor is burning. They burned down Sierra Leone, they burned down Liberia. You can learn more about all the stories you heard here, download more podcasts, and go in depth with our reporters on the news blog. It's all at our website, WNYC.org. You can hear us there 24 hours a day, as well as on the air at 93.9 FM and AM 820. From the WNYC Newsroom, I'm Lance Lucky. Have a great Friday. This time I wanna let them take over my place.